The Owner's Box is part of the In the Money Podcast Network.
You can always log on to inthemoneypodcast.com where you can follow along. You can subscribe to the free newsletter. And not only do you have The Owner's Box, but also shows such as The Players Podcast, JK Plus One, The Matt Bernier Show, Red Board Rewind, Nick Luck Daily, Talk Racing to Me, In the Ring with Acacia Courtney, and Off Track with Maggie. So lots of great things to listen to. Just head over to inthemoneypodcast.com.
Welcome to the Owner's Box. Now, here's Billy Koch and Michelle Yu.
Welcome to another edition of the Owner's Box. I'm Billy Koch, founder and managing partner of Little Red Feather Racing Club. Joining me, as always, is the wonderfully talented Michelle Yu. Michelle, welcome once again to our show.
Thank you, Billy. So excited to be here, although sadly, not with you, although happily in air conditioning.
Yeah, thank God. I'm not in air conditioning. but it is very nice here in Del Mar today. It's a beautiful day in Del Mar. And we have a great guest. We're going to catch up with Greg Helm, who is Roadrunner Racing. He is part owner of Hot Rod Charlie. We're going to find out about his emotions in the Haskell and his ride through the Derby with Hot Rod Charlie, as well as how he put this together. He's a very, very good man. He's had horses with Dan Blacker and now Doug O'Neill. And I think it's going to be interesting for our listeners to hear from Greg Helm, who will come up in a few minutes. But before we do that, Michelle, what do we do on this show?
Three things of note, Billy.
Three things of note. We still need a theme song.
I know. Three things of note.
All right, what do we got?
All right, the first thing of note is racing this weekend at Del Mar. It was awesome. We had general admission back on. There were a ton of people there. Everyone had fun. The veranda was going off the chain. but I want to issue a big congratulations to Brando, the bartender. We have had his connections on our show, including Jerry Weslow. And he won the Cal Dreamin. And also impressive maiden winner Murray was, I would say, stamping himself as like the forerunner for the Del Mar Futurity.
Yeah, he looked very good, and so did Brando, the bartender. You know what? I give credit to TVG. They did a really cool job with this jockey cam. Have you seen this thing?
Mm-hmm,
and they showed Rispoli. It was kind of neat. You know, I don't usually like these kind of gimmicks, and I really enjoyed it. And credit, and I know Weslow's listening to our show. He always does, so congratulations, my man. And Brando, the bartender, just another cool old cowbred, right, Michelle? It seems
yep.
to, they pop up all the time.
I mean, how neat is this horse? Like, he was like a 5-furlong turf specialist, and all of a sudden he's winning races at a mile and the 16th. I mean, dirt, turf, anything. He's just a throwback cowbred. He's great.
He really is. Good for them. Good
all
for
right,
them.
Second thing of note is a little sad. It's the retirement of John Scheer. Anybody that's been around Southern California racing absolutely knows about John Scheer. He was the paddock captain at Santa Anita, and he made worldwide headlines when he threw himself in the path of a runaway thoroughbred, saving a little girl, injuring himself. But after 60-some-odd years at Santa Anita, he's going to be retiring. And I think everyone's kind of sad about it because he's just been a staple at the Great Race Place. But he's super healthy, and he's happy, and he's just ready to ride off into the sunset there. And I know at Santa Anita on the 1st of October, I believe we're going to be having a little something for him.
Well, well deserved. John Scheer, I've known John Scheer for probably my entire life. And what a good man and a gentleman. And I think back to that day where didn't he save a little girl and jumped in mm-hmm. front? The guy weighs like 48 pounds.
Yeah,
and
right.
He basically just saved a little girl and he got trampled by the horse. I mean, he's just a good man. He's been around forever. Sweet as can be, and congratulations on your retirement.
Okay, and then the final thing is, it's definitely of note, but we're going to get a little bit more in depth with this than we normally would. It is the Del Mar Handicapping Challenge coming up this weekend where the surf meets the turf, Billy.
Yeah, it's going to be a big event. You should definitely sign up. There are many great prizes, including a big prize pool, I'm sure. Chris Barr runs it at Del Mar. Michelle, how does someone sign up for the contest?
Okay,
sure,
so
on the
look,
Del Mar
this is
website.
Going to be on track only.
On track only.
Is what the website says. So I think a lot of times we've been doing, you know, this online contest. I believe this is going to be on track only. It is Saturday and Sunday, so it's a 2-day event. July 31st and August 1st. It's a $4,000 buy-in, but $3,000 of that goes to live bankroll, and then $1,000 goes to the prize pool. It's going to be win, play, show, exacta, try, daily double wagering on all the live Del Mar races, including the Bing Crosby and the Clement Hirsch, which are both Breeders' Cup Challenge Series stakes races. And at least 100% of the prize pool, so that $1,000 that goes towards it, is going to be returned in cash and prizes. So there's not going to be like a rake for the house, right? Okay. Included in the prizes, like for first, it's going to be $30,000, $10,000 entry to BCBC, your choice of NHC and a tribal stipend, or the $5,000 Pacific Classic Betting Challenge. Wow. Second, you get all those little thingies, except your monetary amount is $10,000. Third is also $10,000, and then you can get an entry to BCBC. I'm sorry, not $10,000. No cash for third, but the $10,000 entry to BCBC, your choice of NHC and the travel or the Pacific Classic. Fourth and fifth are each getting the entry to BCBC worth $10,000. Sixth and seventh get an entry, a seat at NHC plus a travel stipend. Eighth gets $2,000. Ninth and tenth are going home with $1,500.
That's beautiful.
So, yeah, I think that's there's a ton of great stuff there. It's going to be held in their contest room with no dress code, just so you guys know. Some of these All players right. don't like to have to come and have dress code.
No masks yet.
No. Yeah, I guess no masks. So because we're having this huge contest, and unfortunately we didn't get to play with the Little Red Feather contest last weekend, we're going to dive into this a little bit. Even though we're not a handicapping show, Billy, the PPs are out for Saturday.
Yeah, you wanted to dive.
So I feel
now,
like
you
we
said the Clement Hirsch, but the Clement Hirsch is on Sunday.
Sunday, but it's a two-day handicapping.
Oh, it's 2 days. Oh,
it's Saturday
well, there you go.
And Sunday. All right. So obviously they just drew today for Saturday. So we don't have Sunday PPs at all. But breezing through here, I mean, where are some of the races that people should be putting their money on, you think?
Well, I'll give you one.
Okay.
You know, and I don't have sheets yet, but the Bing Crosby is interesting, Michelle.
It's crazy good, right?
I think you can, you know, you might get a price in here. I think CZ Rocket's going to be favored. But there are some really good and really fast horses, including the Mark Glatt trifecta of Collusion Illusion, Dr. Shivel, and Law Abiding Citizen. They're all very mm-hmm. solid horses. The Return of Eight Rings, who's been a massive disappointment. Quick Tempo for Chris Davis, who just finished second in the Iowa Sprint Stakes with a 94 buyer. He ships out here. And you have Vertical Threat for Richie Baltus, who was last seen in November running 102 buyer and winning by 7.5 lengths for our friends
at Slam
Dunk.
And he was actually supposed to have a prep race. So he was originally slated for a prep race, but he was accidentally treated with a medication. And so he could not run in the prep. So they've had to train him up to this now.
Interesting.
So if you're worried about the layoff, he was ready to run and entered to run, but was not able to because of that.
Well, I think you could take a shot in here is what I'm saying. I don't know who that shot's going to be, Michelle. I'm not bold enough. We just looked, these PPs just came out. Even Shooter Shoot, who's on the inside, has run some big numbers.
We didn't even mention Brickyard Ride.
And I didn't even see Brickyard Ride.
One of the fastest horses in Southern California.
Just ran a 104 buyer. He's 0-2 at Del Mar, but he drew great. He drew outside, which is a huge advantage in here. It should get him out for the lead without much dismay, I should say. Quick Tempo has some speed. Brickyard Ride's going to be in front, and they're all going to have to catch him. So find a price and go for it. And by the way, if you're looking for a double, when are your favorite horses in the race before?
Oh, is it? Let's
yeah.
look.
Look at get some Jeopardy music.
Rip City.
Rip City.
Rip City.
Rip City returns to Del Mar. He won both his races at Del Mar in 2020, in the summer and in the fall. And he's just he's the most honest horse you could imagine.
Runs good fresh.
He really runs good fresh. He shouldn't have a problem with a mile and an eighth. I just kind of perused the PPs real quick. It doesn't look like there's a ton of speed in this race. So Mari Gutierrez, who knows him really, really well, should have him fairly close and hopefully can save some ground for from his outside post. My guess is he's going to be 5-2-ish in here, Michelle.
Okay.
Do you feel that?
I'll
feel
take
like
it.
A five
I'll
to
take
two-ish?
That. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so if you could hook him up with someone in the Ben Crosby.
That's a great double.
Yeah, you can get a nice double. Figure out a price in there, and you get a nice double. So there's your little handicapping tip from the owner's box.
Awesome. All right. So that is in support of the Del Mar Handicapping Challenge. Again, that is on track only. It is this Saturday and Sunday, July 31st to August 1st. And if you want more information or you want to get involved in that, you need to contact Chris Barr. Chris at DMTC, like Del Mar Thoroughbred Club. Del Mar Thoroughbred Club.
Yes.
.com for questions and entries.
Well, good job. And you know what? I got Greg Helm ready to go. So we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Michelle, do you know that Not This Time is the number one second crop sire in almost every category? And he's well on his way to becoming one of the most dominant young sires in North America. Did you know that?
I did know that. I know he's had 9 stakes winners and 14 stakes horses.
10.3% stakes winners and 16.1% stakes horses.
And like we see from a lot of these tailor-made studs, he is the sire of stakes winners on dirt, turf, and synthetic.
A couple of congratulations. Congratulations to Warriors Reward, LLC owner, breeder of yesterday's Malvern's Rose Stakes winner Just One Time.
Also Breeze Easy and Mark Cassie with a win in the Grade 3 Marine Stakes, and that was Easy Time.
And Edge Racing and Kelly Breen on the Grade 3 Kent Stakes winner Yes This Time. If you want a Saturday horse, you better be looking to add Not This Time to your stable.
Call Travis White.
You give a number.
I'm trying to remember his number.
859-885-3345. Travis White, TaylorMade Stallions.
Call him on his cell.
Not This Time. Don't give out his cell.
All right.
All right.
881-6153.
On the owner's box with a very special guest today, one of my very good friends. His name is Greg Helm, and he is Roadrunner Racing, part owner of Hot Rod Charlie. Greg, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much, Billy. Glad to be with you.
Well, we're glad to have you. You know, we've had Bill Strauss on the show once, but we talk about him every week. In fact, he listens to the show and he gets upset if I don't mention his name.
But he's actually, he said this once before, and I have too. He's probably the best partner I've had in horse racing.
Oh, good. That's nice. That's very nice.
That's so nice.
Very, very nice.
See, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. I had to say something nice, but the truth is, he's been just a real pleasure to be a partner with. We've agreed on most everything, right down the line.
Well, it's nice when you agree, especially when you are in partnerships. Greg, before we get... Oh, Michelle, do you have a question?
I just want to know how he got into the partnership, like how we got started and all that jazz.
Well, that was my question, Michelle. You just stole my thunder. Greg, tell us a little bit about your introduction into horse racing ownership, and when did you get started? How did you fall in love with the game?
It's kind of a long story that I'll cut to about 3 seconds if I can, but I used to own an advertising agency, and I won the account Hollywood Park Racetrack. So by nature of the industry, you've got to learn a little bit about horse racing so you can promote it and advertise it. That got me kickstarted into horse racing. And about 10 or 12 years later, I found myself attending the races down here at Del Mar. And a friend of mine sucker punched me into investing a small amount of money into a syndicate. And... he's a very good friend of mine who liked to pick my pocket for charitable contributions. And this time he talked me into the joys of being part of a syndicate of horse racing ownership. And I did that and became a very, very small owner of a lot of horses. But I fell in love with it and proceeded with my wife to expand my investment in that syndicate. And Glenn and my wife invested in a couple of ladies-only syndicates, and then I got in another one, and I found that was one of the terrific ways of owning horses.
Greg, you're talking about bringing your wife into it, and she got into some of the ladies-only syndicates. Was she a horse or a racing fan before that, or did she just watch you dabble and was like, I think I can do it too?
She was a gambling fanatic.
Okay. She's my people.
She has said that might be why I married her, but she loves Las Vegas. She loves casinos. She loves slot machines, 21, football pools, you name it, and she's involved in it. So when I introduced her to horse racing, it was that may have closed the deal on my proposal.
Very nice.
I like it. That's
yeah,
awesome.
We like her. We like her a lot already. Greg, so you started in the syndicate. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, she was thrilled to be in a couple of these ladies-only syndicates. One was Divas and Dudes, and Frisky Phillies, Abaddon to Femme. I'm sure you know some of the managers and trainers. And so she was getting educated in the horse ownership world almost as rapidly as I was.
And then you ultimately made the transition from syndicate to owning a small piece of a lot of horses to then branching off. And we talked about this a little bit at lunch today. Then you said you decided to kind of do more and do your own thing. Talk to us a little bit about the creation of Roadrunner, because I think it's an interesting story.
Looking back on it myself, Billy, it is an interesting story. I'm a semi-retired business executive living out in La Quinta, California, in the Palm Springs area, and happened to have a few friends at the golf club I played at who were horse racing fanatics as well. And after a few Bloody Marys one morning, I think we decided that maybe instead of owning a very small percent of a horse here or there, we might form our own syndicate, get a few partners at La Quinta Country Club to invest and see what we could do. And I, within the matter of a week or two, we had 10 or 11 partners who were willing to roll the dice with us, so to speak, and give horse racing a try.
And it's worked out, but you know what? We talked a little bit today, and we're going to get to Hot Rod Charlie. We want to hear all about the Derby and obviously the Haskell. But it's not always the best thing ever, right? There are issues. Do you want to talk about like the first horse you guys bought? And we can make it brief. We don't want to talk about all the bad things about horse racing, because that's not what this show is about. But I think it's important for people to know that it's not easy.
No, it can be heartbreaking, but just as much as it can be the biggest thrill of your lifetime. We didn't get in it to make a fortune or to think we were going to be the next Kentucky Derby winner, but we wanted to have camaraderie and fellowship and a little fun and something to talk about other than just golf. So we pooled our resources and decided to start buying two-year-olds. And as I mentioned to you, the first one we bought was a strong mandate colt. We bought 50% of it with Bill Strauss, as a matter of fact, just so we can bring him back into
the best partner in the world.
The best partner in the world. He had a share of it. And unfortunately, 2 weeks after we purchased it and flew him out to the trifecta stables in Bonsall, he got spooked in the pasture and in the paddock and ran into the fence and killed himself.
Oh,
so
yeah.
our initiation into horse racing was a tragedy.
I've had that happen. Go ahead, Michelle.
Sorry, because Greg,
go ahead, Michelle.
Just wanted to ask quick, when you were, going into this on your own as a first time kind of in a big owner scenario, why did you go with two-year-olds?
That's a really good question, Michelle. We originally got in and we purchased a portion of some three-year-olds that a trainer, that Dan Blacker had, and they had some luck there. So won the Winter Stakes with Double Touch. Then we expanded into the claiming world and tried claiming a few horses. And after a year and a half, we all reevaluated what we had gone through at various stages and decided that we wanted to reinvigorate the group and try investing larger amounts of equity into better pedigree two-year-olds to see what we might accomplish owning larger shares of better horses. Granted, fewer horses because it's not an endless pot of gold. But so we bought a couple of two-year-olds intentionally with a new strategy, and they did pretty well, with the exception of the strong mandate colt. We followed with a constitution colt and an honor code filly, and they both won their first out and did fairly well.
That's great.
Oh, no, that's Greg Helm is lucky, Michelle.
Debut winners. Yeah. I know. Jeez Louise.
Look, I'm going to go into it now because the people who are listening are like, get to the Hot Rod Charlie story. So, and we talked a little bit about
wait. What? Well, I want to know why it's Roadrunner Racing.
It's his country club.
Oh, that's the golf club.
The golf club's logo is a Roadrunner.
I missed that part.
No, he didn't say it. I just knew it, Michelle.
I just jumped in. I was like, did we get over? That was like my question. And I'm like, how did you hear that? And I like did not hear that.
No, you're not listening. You're not listening.
Oh, goodness.
It's
Michelle, at lunch today, Billy asked me to give him a few things that he could pull over on you so that
exactly
he could be a little bit
starstruck. Billy doesn't like to do his homework, so this is like his way of doing it.
Exactly. Well, I paid for lunch, so I think I deserve it.
All right.
Wait, Greg. So get to, we talk about, you're talking about 2 year olds. You're talking about, I know you also did some claiming, with, Bill Spahr and Dennis O'Neill calls you one day and he says, listen, I bought a yearling. You go.
He called me in October, a year and a half ago, almost 2 years now. And he had been the bloodstock agent for the 2 year olds that we'd purchased. And he called and said, I've got a yearling you might be interested in. And I said, probably not. We're just getting our feet wet on two-year-olds, and I'm not sure we want to buy a yearling and then wait a year and a half before he runs. So I think maybe you should check with some of the other prospective owners. And he said, well, okay, but this is a half-brother to Mattoli. And I said, we'll take half.
That's how you do it. You just goes, we take, I love that. We'll take half.
We'll take half. I rolled the dice. One way or another, I'll talk to my partners and we'll put in a little more capital. But I just felt that it was worth having what I expected to be a world-class sprinter in our stable.
I mean, that's got to be amazing to go from even having expectations like that and then not being stellar off the mark to all of a sudden being like at the forefront of the three-year-old crop.
As I said, that's the reason we named him Hot Rod Charlie. It's broodmare sire was Indian Charlie, and we thought he was going to be a sprinter, so we threw a hot rod in there. But to our surprise, he turned out to be a router. And very good at it, obviously, although his first three outings, they were good, but he still couldn't break into the winner's circle until his fourth time out. But he just was getting so much smarter and more muscles and heavier and just seemed like a terrific prospective horse down the road. I wasn't expecting to get a call from Doug O'Neill, the trainer, that said, well, he won his finally broke his maiden. How about if we run it in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile?
Well, you were only 94 to 1 that day.
Exactly. So we've run four times. We'd only won the fourth race, and he says, "Well, you know, there may be an opening. It may not be a big field. It could be a good thing." Of course, you got to pay the entry fee and flying him over there and one thing and another. But we went ahead and once again rolled the dice and sent him to Keeneland and watched him go off at 94-1.
And then watched him run bang up in that race.
Well, it was interesting. I was telling Billy at lunch that the Roadrunner Racing Group, the five partners and myself and their spouses were watching the race on the terrace at La Quinta Country Club, and And when he crossed the line in second place, the lady, one of the wives of the owners said, "My goodness, I just won $2,200.
I'm buying drinks.
A voiceover on the other side of the bar said, "I just won $3,500. I just won $5,000. And finally, the wife of one of our partners said, "I just won $26,000.
Wow.
In the space of a few moments, we recovered our entire investment in purchasing Hot Rod Charlie.
That's really cool. Awesome. Greg Helm joining us here on the Owner's Box. Tell us a little bit about, so you run second, the Breeders' Cup, all of a sudden you get Derby fever. Explain to the our audience what that feels like.
What the trip is like to get from Breeders' Cup to the Kentucky Derby.
It was a lot of sleepless nights. It's pretty hard to believe. Following the Breeders' Cup, landing back in the Bob Lewis, and he was battling down the stretch against Medina Spirit in that one, and did not prevail. Then we took him down to Louisiana and ran him in the Louisiana Derby, where, as I'm sure you know, he was able to win the Louisiana Derby, and that qualified us for sure into the Kentucky Derby, because mm-hmm. we got 100 points.
Yeah, well, we also saw Bill Strauss's interview.
The world saw Bill Strauss's interview.
Wait, were you in Louisiana?
Yes. Yeah, you wouldn't have known it with Bill Strauss.
Yeah, he kind of took over. Did you say to him, "Hey, why don't you let me do the interview next time"?
No, I didn't. You know, we have such a good friendship. It just is automatically shared each time, and we always mention the other guy. And you know, quite frankly, Bill and I were overshadowed by the boat racing people, because they had about 100 family members and fellow Brown University people at the fairgrounds that day, and they were the story of the Louisiana Derby. Happily, just to promote more age groups and young people getting into racing, it was really terrific to see.
All right, so you
That's
win the Louisiana
really great
Derby.
To hear, though.
Yeah, oh, it's awesome. We need more youth for sure. But you win the Louisiana Derby. You've punched your ticket to the Derby. What was Derby week like? I saw you there. You seemed like you were soaking it all in.
Oh, how can you not? I had the good fortune of my wife Glenna and I going the week before and spending the full week there. Most of every other Roadrunner racing partner and their spouse came on Thursday or Friday, but they missed that special feeling that Louisville rolls out, and Lexington, Louisville and Lexington roll out to the owners and their friends. It was a spectacular week of touring some of the breeding farms and experiencing the post position draw and the trainers dinners and all of the fall-to-all that the Kentucky Derby puts forth in Churchill Downs. It was one of the best weeks, if not the best week of my life.
What's the one thing you would have done now you've been through it? Is there something that you missed? Is there something that you'd sit in a different place? Is there anything that you would have done differently now when you go next time?
Other than win. Next time and we have other than win would be good. I think that now that I know a little bit more about the walkover to and from the barn on the track and some of the places to sit, we took advantage of Churchill Downs hospitality and sat in the owner's box for the Hot Rod Charlie. But that wasn't exactly the best venue in the world. I think I'd probably know more about some of the other suites that would be better during the day.
Mm-hmm.
I also would get there. I also made the mistake of not getting there for the entire day. I missed a couple of the first races, and I think every single race on Derby Day and Oaks Day is spectacular. And
if
anybody goes, they should experience every single race.
That's good advice for that. Greg, I want to fast forward then to what potentially could have been even better week than Kentucky Derby week, and that was Haskell week until the race became official. Can you walk us through Haskell Day and your feelings?
That may be the shortest story you'll ever get, because the feelings go, I mean, how do you go from the amazing high of mm-hmm. winning your first grade one and the Haskell to being DQ'd 4 minutes later, 5 minutes mm-hmm. later? I saw a report where the time from when the gates opened to when the DQ was declared was less than 6 minutes.
Wow.
So I wasn't allowed to celebrate very long. I was watching it in the paddock at Del Mar and with a lot of the boat racing guys, and we were immediately led over to the TVG booth to take a look at the replays over and over, and it was pretty devastating.
Did you
now that you've had a chance?
You know,
go ahead, Greg.
The one thing that's astounding in my feelings and my partners, and I think even the boat racing and Bill Strauss, is I mean, it was a large purse and a lot of cash, as well as the entry fee into the Breeders' Cup. And I don't think we've ever even mentioned that to each other. It's about not winning the Haskell. It's just
right.
That hurt, you know.
No, but absolutely.
I think Hot Lap's going to have a long career.
Yeah, Greg Helm joining us here on the Owner's Box, owner of Hot Rod Charlie, Roadrunner Racing. That's a great thing that you just mentioned, because, and I know you and I have talked about this in the past, horse racing is the experience. In fact, you've called it a hobby before. Just go into a little bit about that, because I think that is a perfect segue from what you just said. Rarely, when you win a race, rarely do you say, hey, we just won that big purse.
Exactly. You don't go, oh my gosh, we just got $36,000. You know, it's watching that horse come down the stretch and that feeling of finishing first. It's an astounding feeling. Maybe later Saturday mornings when I'm doing the books for the Roadrunner Racing, I might notice.
You makes notice, a lot easier.
A little more on the credit side, but you know, the debits aren't quite as overpowering as the credits. But it gets to a point where it's about the camaraderie and the thrill. It's not about the dollars and cents. And I guess that's like a runner's high, I would imagine, that you just feel sensational. I do have to say one thing, though. I can't qualify as a hobby. My CPA said I can't qualify.
Oh, for sure. No. And, you know, the government is probably listening to the show.
You have to lose too much. You have to lose a lot to be a hobby.
Yeah, that's right.
Greg, first of all, I want to say that I have been a Hot Rod Charlie fan for a long time, and I still put him in the top two of my Longines weekly rankings, even though he wasn't the official winner of the Haskell. I just think he's awesome. And I want to know, as a fan, where he's going to run next.
Well, I was telling Billy at lunch that my passion and my longing is to get a grade one.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we have an opportunity if we run against three-year-olds, more than three-year-olds and older.
Mm-hmm.
So as Doug O'Neill has said, we're going to pass on the Pacific Classic and right now, we're looking at the Penn Derby as the likely next race.
Okay.
But that's Doug and I and Bill and Patrick O'Neill, the manager of boat racing, we all say, Charlie's going to tell us. When he's ready, mm-hmm. that's when he's going to run.
Do right by the horse, and the horse will do right by you. I have a quick question, Greg, before we wrap this thing up, because you said you were in advertising. One of the things we didn't talk about at lunch, and we talked about a lot, obviously you're hearing it on the show, is what can horse racing do? Do you ever notice anything from an advertising marketing standpoint that we might be able to improve as a society of horse racing, and what we're doing to attract younger people, attract different audiences, attract minorities, whatever the case may be?
I'm kind of stumped on that question, obviously, Billy, but I certainly feel horse racing can do a lot more to initiate messages rather than respond to messages or respond to bad news that comes along. And it's always going to come along, comes along in every industry. But I think there are elements, just as we've been talking today about the passion and the camaraderie and that thrill, I think if we can communicate that out to audiences of different demographics, it would be phenomenal. I think the Brown University boat racing guys have done wonderful service to the community, the horse racing community, by showing such youthful exuberance and professionalism. If we could replicate that at every track with more ownership groups who get press, it would be phenomenal.
I think that's a great response, and exactly what I agree. It was exactly what we need. Those guys were great. They were all over the Derby. I remember I was sitting right outside the paddock up above, and they were chanting Hot Rod Charlie for like 10 minutes. It was awesome.
And, that's cool.
It was a lot of fun. Greg Helm, obviously, we wish you all the best. We appreciate your time this afternoon. We always end with one last question, and that is give some advice to someone listening who's about to become a horse owner. What's the one most important piece of advice you would give out?
Get in the game. There are so many ways that a person can get into the ownership ranks in thoroughbred racing for very, very small amounts of money. Just realize that you'll probably get so hooked on it that you'll be investing more and more. But don't just be a fan. Try to be an owner. It's light years different than when you're cheering a horse down the stretch. Even if you own 1% of that horse, the feeling is just as strong as if you owned 100%.
Great advice. Great advice. We appreciate it. I know I had a nice time, and thank you again for meeting for lunch and coming on the show today. We are huge Hot Rod Charlie fans here on the Owner's Box, and we wish you and Roadrunner Racing all the best.
Thanks so much, Michelle and Billy.
Thank you, Greg.
All right, that's Greg Helm here on the Owner's Box. Michelle, good man.
Great. I feel like now we've had every ownership interest in Hot Rod Charlie, and he's like, I think that the show should be like a partial owner of him now.
I don't think they'll give us a piece, but it would be interesting. We can have Bill Strauss
just like
come
a
back on
piece. Like anyone that's been listening, right? And our listeners get like
What do we have coming up at Del Mar this weekend, Michelle?
Well, we obviously have the handicapping challenge that we were talking about, and some really great stakes races on tap, including the Win and You're In for Breeders' Cup races, the Clement L. Hirsch on Sunday, and the Bing Crosby on Saturday.
For all you TaylorMade Stallion fans, Midnight Storm had a winner today.
Did he win?
Yeah, at Colonial Downs. What, very impressive 2-year-old winner.
On grass then.
Yes, long on the grass. Yeah. Very, very impressive. Awesome. So good start for Midnight Storm. Thanks to Greg Holm for joining us today. Thanks to Michelle Yu for always taking the time to do this and provide all the best analysis. And she's on about a million different shows. So for her, she's just the best. Thanks to TaylorMade Stallions.
Thanks
to
Billy for taking out Greg for lunch.
Yeah, that was a good move by me. So he came on the
it
show.
Was.
I had to kind of bribe him. Thanks to everybody. If you need any more information about the show, at Own a Horse is our Twitter handle, at the Michelle Yu, at BKLRF. You can email me for more information about ownership, billy@littleredfeather.com. Really appreciate any comments, questions that you have, or suggestions for guests that you'd like to hear on the show. We would certainly appreciate it. And we will be back next week from the place where the turf meets the surf. Michelle, do you want to sing?
Del Mar.
Hey, you know what's coming up on Friday, by the way, before we leave?
What?
It's the race that I did my Trevor impression. The real
oh,
good deal.
That's right. Atomic drop in the Chosen Vron.
And the Chosen Vron. Yeah. If it comes, we're going to have to recreate the. And we had a winner over the weekend, howbeit, but we didn't get the huge call. We didn't get the moving like a winner or anything like that. But I'm going to have to talk to Trevor.
That was a good race, though.
It was a very good race. Congratulations to Mark Latt, who did a great job with that horse. All right. We've run out of time. Goodbye, Michelle.
Bye.